So welcome everyone. It's really an honor and a pleasure to be here, and it's such a lovely turnout. So thank you so very much for coming out on this lovely evening. Thanks too to the volunteers, everybody that helped today, and Sue and everyone. I know Lloyd, you're consistently helping, holding this center together, and to Wary, you're delivering of the teachings. Thank you so much for holding it down here. It's lovely to have been like you, sitting out there for 8 years, way back when I started sitting right after 9/11, and got very involved, was coordinating volunteers, etc., here for many years. And then Tuari and I took the community Dharma leaders together. This mala here is, there's a bead for every one of us in the cohort. So Tuari, you're here with me. Whenever I teach, typically. Okay. So I'm curious, because we have some new people, and I really want you to feel welcome. And, you know, if there's anything that any of us can do to have this be one of your spiritual homes, please constructively let us know. I'm curious who is new to meditation, and I don't want you to feel shy about that at all. We welcome you. Oh, okay. There's a couple of hesitant, yes, right? And I actually developed this class series because I spent so many years at Sims here and elsewhere, many nights of retreat. And often it's sort of like, follow the breath, which is great and very helpful and very important. And I followed the instruction, and I'm good with that. And yet there seems to be a wide range of things all coming from the Buddha's teachings, from the sutras, that indicate that there are all kinds of ways that we can reach calm abiding, that we can increase calm abiding in our lives, which is our intention here this evening. And so, you know, I've certainly heard about all kinds of different techniques. And so this evening I wanted to talk about single-pointed concentration. I'm sure it's a technique that many of you are very familiar with. And then I also wanted to talk about moment-to-moment awareness, which is also a technique many of you have probably experienced. And then actually move into what is referred to as luminous mind. I think it's Steve Armstrong calls it big mind or sky mind, you know? And I really am all into sort of having those three techniques as a progression, that it works for me. And I offer it tonight, hoping that it might work for you. One of them might work on Tuesday, one might work better than Thursday, you know, depending on your disposition. That's the other thing. It's sort of like there isn't one thing that we can rely on. There's actually a world of technique that can allow us to get to calm abiding, and depending on our disposition. You know, if the mind is all chattery and you can't stop because she said what she said at work and it, you know, you can't let it go, you know, or whatever it may be, you know, there are different, you might use a different approach if your mind isn't at all quiet. Or you might, if you have some sense of calm abiding when you come into the room, you know, another approach might be more appropriate. So this is really just to provide, you know, to have more tools in your toolkit, you know, in your meditation toolkit. Simultaneously, we all know it's not about technique, right? It's sort of like a lot of people are caught up in technique and they can do it really well, but not really getting to the calm abiding, you know. Or I, you know, another thing I've experienced with so many of my students is that there's this one thing they think following the breath is it, and that if they can't do that, then they're lousy meditators, you know? And I know I've sat frustrated with that myself, you know? It's sort of like, that's just not true, you know? It's not true. The truth is, whenever we get to the cushion or the chair, it's already an A+, you know? And I remember sitting with Will Kabat-Zinn because, you know, sometimes you have a really good sit, you know? I might say, you know, you might reach something like a luminous mind or get to the zone, you know, where it's just you've got that feeling that you're connected to so much more in your meditation, you know? And sometimes not, you know, just forget it. It's not going to happen tonight, you know? And simultaneously, you can't judge. It's like, just because that happened on Tuesday and it didn't happen on Thursday doesn't make Tuesday better. They're both just sits. The intention is what counts, that we got to the cushion to try to increase our own sense of peace in our lives. And by doing that, of course, we increase peace in the world. So I also just wanted to sort of give you an understanding of how we're going to approach the evening, because I do things a little differently. So many times we come in here and we sit, and then we get the Dharma teachings. But because we're actually talking about how to meditate, the different ways and techniques we can employ in meditation, I actually wanted to do that first, and then we'll spend some time in small groups, so that I can offer some prompts that might allow us to bear witness to one another. I mean, you know, there's nothing more compassionate that we can offer one another. The dana, there's nothing more generous we can do than, you know, just listening with undivided attention to one another. So we'll have a chance to talk, and I think sometimes when we talk about it, things become clearer, or else you'll hear something from one of your partners that will be better. And, you know, my voice is not the only voice we need to hear from this evening, you know, so we'll do that. And then we'll take a break, and then we'll come back and sit. And hopefully we won't be too sleepy, you know, but then we'll have all that information to inform our noble silence, as compared to doing the noble silence and then moving into the Dharma talk. We'll allow the Dharma talk, hopefully, to create some awareness for us. So single-pointed concentration is just, it's really very, very important, and I find a great way to start a meditation. And in Vipassana, it's very, very typical that people will ask you, you'll be invited to focus on the breath. But in fact, you know, that was the Buddha's teaching. He actually said, breathing in a long breath, I know I am breathing in a long breath. Breathing in a short breath, I know I am breathing in a short breath. So by just staying with that very simple instruction of the Buddha, we can actually start to get to some single-pointed concentration. Is it, you know, what is the texture of it? Long, short, jagged, smooth? How's my body involved with the breath in any given moment, you know? It seems that in single-pointed concentration, and often when we begin with those nice, deep, relaxing breaths, you know? It's hard to not relax. You take a deep breath, you know, and then let it go. It just increases calm, you know? And then actually, as we move into a higher concentrated states, as we build relaxation, I find, the breath is less prevalent. It thins a little, and it's not so gross or strong, you know? It happens for different people in different ways at different times. And it's not, I think, really important for us to recognize, to not judge, you know. I have so many people come up to me after sits telling me that, oh, I really tried, but I can't this and I can't that, you know, and it's this frustrated energy. And the truth is that it cannot be forced, you know. So we try to encourage relaxation because, well, you can't focus and concentrate if you're tense, you know. If you're contracted, it's hard to focus, you know. So in order to become clear about all that is that we are experiencing, all that we are in this very present moment, it's important to relax. You know, that's essential. And in single-pointed concentration, the Buddha likened it to a candle flame, you know, where in fact the flame grows and it's bright. And even if the wind blows, it does not flicker. It stays steady. And I found in my own practice that regardless of what's going on in the head or what's going around, you know, because my mentor teacher, Larry Yang, says, I can sit anywhere, at any time, with anybody, you know? And that's the truth of it, that there's an opportunity to sit all throughout our day, or at least to invite mindfulness, and these techniques might help with that. But what does it mean to have a steady, to build, to cultivate a steady concentration practice? And this really is our purification process, right? Because otherwise the mind is spinning and, you know, you're thinking about God knows what all over the place. What does it mean to focus in, you know, in order to create that kind of the concentration that will lead to the relaxation? So you choose an object, and it doesn't have to be the breath. It can change. But the breath is really a good one. I have found that no matter how distracted I am, or no matter where I am, how busy it might be, I can actually just move into a focus on how the breath is entering my body and how it is leaving. And all of a sudden, that's my full attention. After many years of practice, I've actually been able to just get there, and I can get there really quickly. And it's very, very helpful, especially when I know I'm in an unskillful state, which is, you know, a lot. You know, it's sort of like when the mind is whatever, you know, it's sort of like, hang on, let me just check in with the breath, you know, and then just focus back in. It is an opportunity to replace unskillful means with skillful means. And wow, if it weren't for that breath, none of us would be here. We take it for granted. And I know you've had, you know, some kind of bronchitis or some kind of terrible flu and you were all congested, and you know how scary it can be, especially for those of us who are a little claustrophobic, if you can't breathe readily, if you can't breathe easily. And God knows there's a market of drugs to make sure that you can do that, you know, and inhalers and all kinds of things. We take the breath for granted, but in fact, it's really the only real thing that indicates our lives in this moment, you know? There's certainly the heartbeat, but it's the breath that allows everything to work, the whole system. It's sort of it's the key in the ignition. So the Buddha's Radiant Sutra, he says, beloved, your questions require the answers that come through direct living experience. The way of experience begins with the breath, such as the breath you are breathing now. Awakening into the luminous reality may dawn in the momentary throb between any two breaths. The breath flows in, and just before it turns to flow out, there is a flash of pure joy. Life is renewed. Awaken into that. And so that's the other thing about single-pointed concentration that I always like to emphasize with my students. It's sort of like, you know the breath coming in. You can feel it. I'm alive. I'm breathing in. And, you know, if you ask people to do it together, there's always that loud, oh, you know, that people are exhaling. But what about that moment in between? This that he refers to as the flash of pure joy. It's this moment of suspension and such a rich place for investigation. And in our lives, we don't even think about it. You know, it's like in and out, in and out, in and out. We never think about that moment in between. And I'm hoping that when we actually sit meditation this evening, we'll have an opportunity to do that. So, the single-pointed concentration is a wonderful place to begin, and then we can move into moment-to-moment awareness. Here the field of awareness grows, it expands. So we have a stronger awareness of all the different things that are going on. So if I were sitting, I might notice sounds on the outside, sounds inside the room. I might notice how my clothes feel on my body, which is not something we typically do. And always being able to return to the breath as an anchor as needed, right? But the real thing with single-pointed concentration is to not make a big deal out of the changing objects of attention, right? Because then you get swept up, you know, so you're sitting, it's like, I think I smell Mexican food. Maybe I'll stop at Chipotle on the way home. God, I didn't get dinner. I'm really hungry. I think I'll get the quesadilla. I love their quesadilla. So then you're off, right? Then you're gone, right? And then, but before the smell of Mexican food is just the smell of food. And before the smell of food is just the smell. So if you might imagine yourself at Gasworks Park, it's a gorgeous day, and you're sitting on that mound, you know, just watching the boats go by, and that's really what it's like. You know, a thought, a feeling, a sensation might appear and float slowly into consciousness and abide and be present and prevalent for a moment, and then you just watch it go by. You don't get in the water, swim out there, and get on board. Moment-to-moment awareness asks you just to notice the moment without getting all involved with it. So you're not thinking about the menu at Chipotle, right? You just, oh, smell, food. Then, of course, in moment-to-moment awareness, you can always use the Buddhist teaching of Vedana. I smell Mexican food, pleasant, you know. Or if it's not a cuisine you like, or you smell something else, unpleasant, or somewhere in between. And anyone can change, right, in Vedana. It might be pleasant, you know, that first piece of chocolate cake is lovely. But if you were to have two, then it starts to maybe cause a bellyache, and then all of a sudden it's unpleasant. That same chocolate cake becomes unpleasant, right? So depending on what your relationship with it, the experience of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral can change. It's changing all the time. So Dzogchen Ponlop in Mind Beyond Death has this to say about moment-to-moment awareness. All of this happens through the development of concentration on the breath. Then it reaches a very refined state, the beautiful breath. We shift our focus then from the focus on the breath to the focus on the knowing. We learn to recognize it. Stabilize the mind in the knowing. We open up to the knowing of whatever is arising. This is the whole experience. Here, we begin to have a very direct understanding of anatta, of selflessness, because we see that it's all rolling on by, all by itself. There's no one there doing anything. So, in moment-to-moment awareness, those of us with chronic pain or a bad knee, you know, sometimes it's hard to take your, to move your attention away from something that's very prevalent. And I know that I, you know, when I first started sitting with Rodney, he said, work with whatever is prevalent. Well, that might not be the breath, you know. What's prevalent might be what happened at the office this afternoon, you know, or the pain that you're experiencing in your knee that will not go away or subside, you know. So what does it mean to find what is prevalent and still not get swept up, right? In single-pointed concentration, you might give it all of its attention. But one of the things that I do with students who have chronic pain is I say, you know, can you put some of your attention elsewhere? You know? Or we might experience it in the during the day. You know, many of us are at computers all day long and in that screen and, you know, grabbing lunch and talking on the phone and, you know, there's just all those things going on. And, you know, my teacher Larry would say, 5% of your attention, you know, on the fingertips, on the keyboard. So that not all of your attention is absorbed or swept up. You know, keep a little reserve, you know. And then as you do that, you find that you open up the opportunity for spaciousness at any given moment, right? Spaciousness just is, really. It's only our capacity to connect with it that varies. It's always there. So we then go from moment to moment awareness, and again, not lingering on any object of attention, to what I refer to as luminous mind. And you know, the teachings, the Buddhist teachings, there's like, you know, 30 words for joy or bliss, or, you know, they graduate and they grow. I mean, there's all kinds of different experiences with this very pleasant sense of what might arise when you're in a concentrated state and not really working that hard. Because in luminous mind, it actually becomes effortless, right? You're not really trying. You're just, as the Rinpoche said, you're just with the knowing, you know, that all of these different things are occurring simultaneously. But then with luminous mind, what I become aware of is that I'm connected to something really, really big, vast, you know? It's just a remarkable universe that we're a part of. And all of those, you know, millions of stars in a night sky that are all shining in this moment but have took different light years to arrive into our awareness and shine when they do, and we're made of the same stuff. This is really a magnificent mystery that we have this incredible opportunity to be a part of. Even with a bad knee, You know, how many times do I look in the mirror and I'm not really happy with what I see? But the Buddha said, he said, in this fathom-long body, all of the Dharma is revealed. All you need is a body. Well, we've got that. So there's nothing else we need. We've got all that it takes. So in Luminous Mind, what I experience is more of what Ponlop was saying about not really feeling so much about myself. The breath really thins. It's very subtle. And I'm really connected. I'm hearing everything, it feels like. In some of the research these days, there's a lovely book out on consciousness where he talks about being headless, right? That suddenly you're just connected to a much, much larger energy than just the little story of our lives that seems to preoccupy us and take up so much attention. And that's the other joy of what it means for us to be in this room together this evening. Because, you know, we sit at home and we have some experience with sitting at home. And there is a field of energy that we create when we use single-pointed concentration or moment-to-moment or whatever. But when we do it in community, this spiritual friendship, we're all supporting one another's endeavor, right? So I'm sitting here and I'm supporting your practice and you're supporting mine, and we're in this together. Well, the field of energy this evening is going to be so much greater than anything I could come up with at home, just because there's so much concentration. If I experience a moment of peace at home in my meditation practice, how could it not be intensified by all of you, all of us, practicing peace together? So we become more aware of our interconnection, what Thich Nhat Hanh refers to as interbeing, right? How we are all connected. And we have a sense of one another in the room and the energy that we are creating. And this wondrous mystery that really we can't really explain in words, that the human mind cannot, it's unfathomable, but we can still feel it. You know, we can still have a real strong sense of it, even without being able to describe it. And for me, I've noticed that single-pointed concentration can move sweetly into moment-to-moment awareness, which can then lead into a more luminous mind state. So I've heard each of these techniques being taught individually, but I've never heard them taught as a sequential pattern. And to me, that has worked. I've just sort of blended them, you know? And it really has proven to be of value in my practice. And I hope that maybe it will be with you and we'll experience that this evening. We'll put our practice to work. I would like to invite us to get into small groups.